was able to draw melodies out of the air in a very graceful and inspired way. And the melodies didn't even sound like each other. He was able to just grab them.
His first songs and compositions were, strictly speaking, jazz compositions. I think you find the flow of jazz in most of his songs. You can play the melody and be jazzing it up.
Dad had jazz licks in his hands, in his head, that he would, could never and would never, ever be able to divorce himself from. Jazz was, you know, in his bones.
He grew up in the 1920s, and the hot jazz of that era stayed with him the rest of his life. His songs, Skylark, Lazy Bones, The Nearness of You, and this, The Incomparable Stardust, heard here in its first recording, are known and loved by millions. Moviegoers couldn't get enough of him, delivering songs and words of wisdom from the keyboard in his laid-back way. But for all his success as a popular songwriter and singer, he remained, in his own mind, a jazz piano player. I'm Nancy Wilson. On this edition of Jazz Profiles, we pay tribute to the old music master himself, the most uniquely American songwriter of them all, Hoagy Carmichael. Stardust was Hoagy Carmichael's greatest hit. It's become a kind of unofficial national anthem, loved by generation after generation. At last count, it had been recorded nearly 1,500 times by popular artists from Bing Crosby to Willie Nelson, and by opera singers and jazz musicians alike. It was important for Nat King Cole and John Coltrane, and gave clarinetist and bandleader Artie Shaw one of the best-selling records of his career. Hoagy Carmichael composed Stardust first as a jazz instrumental. He worked out the changes at a jam session, developing the melody from some licks played by his friend, the great jazz cornetist Bix Beiderbecke. Pianist and singer Max Morath.
Stardust became basic stuff for the jazz man's book. It's like playing the blues. You're expected to know the chord progression. Let's do Stardust. Standard key is C, starts on an F chord. You had to know that.
Singer Barbara Lee.
The music is magic. It just draws you in. And it starts right out. Sometimes I wonder, wow, what a way to draw a person in. The swell, the flow of the music is wonderful. It's just, it's everybody's story. It's like the music creates the story.
But Hoagy Carmichael was more than just the man who wrote Stardust. He was a product of jazz and remained loyal to it all his life. He was born Hoagland Howard Carmichael in Bloomington, Indiana, on November 22, 1899, the very eve of the 20th century. Like his lifelong friend, Louis Armstrong, who performed and recorded so many of his songs, he came to typify much that was best about that century. He was lean and light, never more than 135 pounds, and standing just 5'7" in his socks. His family never had much money and moved around a lot, and the boys' folksy Hoosier manner couldn't disguise a nervous energy, a determination to escape his family's genteel poverty that burned in him like a 3-alarm fire. Indiana in those days was changing fast, from a small town land of farms and forest to a faster, more modern place built on industry and city life. Young Hoagland discovered music early. His mother played ragtime piano in local silent movie houses, and before long the boy was picking out tunes on the family upright. Max Morath.
I recall years ago on some radio show hearing Carmichael being interviewed, and he said he learned to play the maple leaf rag from his mother. So I have to think that that influence of being indoctrinated with the idea that you didn't have to observe the beat. You could hear it in your hand or your heart or your head, but then you could work all around it, which of course is the nature of jazz. And Carmichael grew up with that and then took it into the world of jazz.
Hoagy Carmichael in a 1964 interview.
There were two or three people in Bloomington, Indiana who could play by ear and played very well. I listened to them constantly and it gave me ideas and thoughts and gave me an inspiration to try to duplicate some of the things that they did. And the first thing you know, I was playing a real fine jazz piano in 1919 and 20. I was playing the new type jazz.
Hoagy Carmichael's son, Hoagy Bix Carmichael.
Early on in Dad's jazz life, he was very lucky because he had this wonderful little area called Bucktown just outside of Bloomington, which had a lot of wonderful black jazz players in it. And when you're 12 or 13 and you're hearing this stuff, it makes a deep impression on you, and especially because it had a wonderful beat and it was hot licks.
Jazz was everywhere in the early 1920s. In Chicago, King Oliver was featuring his young cornet protege, Louis Armstrong, at the Lincoln Gardens. The New Orleans Rhythm Kings were raising the roof every night at the Friars Inn. You could hear Jelly Roll Morton play the piano, Johnny Dodds and Jimmy Noon on clarinet, and the silvery cornet tones of Bix Beiderbecke. I'm Comin' Virginia, played by Bix Beiderbecke on cornet with Frankie Trumbauer's orchestra. Hoagy Carmichael.
Bix took a few little lessons, a few piano lessons, and I might have taken a few cornet lessons, but I don't think many. It'd make every musician flip his lid when he'd play a chorus. I don't care what chorus or anything he played. Like you have the screaming girls, you know, and they listen to the stuff in the last decade. Well, we guys didn't scream, but we felt the same way. He was that good.
Hoagy was so dazzled by Bix that he went out and borrowed a beat-up cornet and taught himself to play it. He even played a solo on a record date. In the spring of 1924, Hoagy hired Bix and his band, the Wolverines, to play some dances at Indiana University. Inspired by what he heard, Hoagy created his first composition, a jazz instrumental called Riverboat Shuffle. pianist, singer, and songwriter Dave Frischberg.
I always felt when I listened to his early work that he's writing essentially instrumental music at that time. It sounded like lead trumpet parts the way he'd play, you know, like do-do-da-do-do-da-fee-do-da-do-da-do-da-da-da-da. It didn't sound like he was writing songs with words planned. And, you know, even in the Stardust melody, it sounds very much like a jazz trumpet lick. That's hardly vocal writing.
Pianist, singer, and songwriter Bob Doro.
Well, I think Hoagie was definitely swept up with the jazz age, and, of course, his heroes were the Wolverines and Paul Whiteman and Bix. And his first songs and compositions were, strictly speaking, jazz compositions. I think you find the flow of jazz in most of his songs. The jazz is there. You can play the melody and be jazzing it up.
I had a new thought about music, the new jazz, and it led me into writing things that nobody else has ever written, and that's why they were hits, and I did not have to write as many tunes to get a hit as many other people who probably didn't have that early background of jazz that I had, and the ability to improvise.
You're listening to NPR Jazz Profiles, a tribute to Hoagie Carmichael. I'm Nancy Wilson. After Riverboat Shuffle, new melodies kept coming to Hoagie Carmichael as fast as he could get them down on paper. One of the first was an instrumental he called Washboard Blues. He recorded it with an Indiana group, and the record soon caught the attention of Paul Whiteman, leader of the most popular band in the country. Bix joined Whiteman in late 1927. Within a month, his friend Hoagie was playing and singing Washboard Blues on a record with a man known as the King of Jazz.
Up to that washing soap and down to that water once more. Four hands go, oh Lordy, so weary, a scrubbing, face weary, so weary, up tubbing them clothes. Up to that washing soap and down to that water once more. Washboard Blues. Never get me gone from here. Scrub them dirty clothes all year. Them clothes, them mustardy clothes, them raggedy clothes, them grimy clothes, that's all I know. Up and down, back and forth, all year long. Oh Lordy, won't you hear my song? Hear my song.
Hoagie Carmichael in 1927, singing and playing his own Washboard Blues with Bix Beiderbecke and Paul Whiteman's orchestra. Hoagie's singing, like his piano playing, was homespun, but it somehow fit the songs. Washboard Blues marked the arrival of an original and unique composing talent. It's not about love or romance. It's about life and work, and perhaps most surprising of all, the innermost thoughts of a woman. Barbara Lee has often sung Washboard Blues.
She's a washerwoman. She takes in other people's washing. She's got a man that's sleeping and kids that are yelling. And she's walking down to the river to wash the clothes and back up to the washing soap. That's a long way from my experience. But I've worked, and I've worked hard, and I've been tired, and I've been hopeless. And so every place, every one of those words that can connect with my experience, I make the connection. That song, to me, is a lot more about just this terrible drudgery. And it's about her whole life and how tired and weary she is. And I think we've all been there.
Riverboat Shuffle and Washboard Blues helped set Hoagie on his way as a composer, but he was far from certain that the ups and downs of a musician's life were really what he wanted.
I had convinced myself that I should be a businessman and that music was not the proper way to become a rich man. So when I graduated from law in Indiana University, I left my band and I went to Florida and I tried to practice or become a lawyer in a period of 9 months. All of a sudden, through my window of my office, I heard a record being played across the street, and it sounded familiar. I mean, the music did. And I ran across the street, and there was a record of Red Nichols had made of my Washboard Blues. Well, to make a long story short, I packed up my books and things, and I came north and got back into the music business.
Hoagy moved to New York City in 1929, and he couldn't have arrived at a better time. Jazz was everywhere, and all kinds of singers and instrumentalists were eager to try out each new Carmichael song the minute the ink was dry on the pages. He soon recorded Rockin' Chair, another song in the spirit of Washboard Blues. On hand to sing the melody on his trumpet was Duke Ellington's great plunger soloist, Bubber Miley. By the end of the 1920s, Stardust, the instrumental Hoagy had written in Indiana, had a lyric by Mitchell Parrish, which perfectly captured the melody's flavor. Stardust quickly became a standard. Author and critic John McDonough.
When I go back and listen to the important recordings of Stardust, I find jazz musicians dealing with Stardust in a very almost literal kind of way. In other words, I've assumed that the gravitational pull of that melody is so strong that it makes it difficult for jazz musicians to back off on it and do a pure improvisation.
In 1931, Stardust got the royal treatment on record by none other than Louis Armstrong. Louis Armstrong's 1931 recording of Stardust, one of the great collector's items of jazz history. At one stroke, it lifted Hoagy Carmichael into jazz prominence. Apart from success as a songwriter, Hoagy was also attracting attention as a performer. People seemed to like the folksy Indiana twang of his voice, and you can hear it on his own Georgia On My Mind, recorded in 1930 with Jack Teagarden on trombone, Joe Venuti on violin, Bud Freeman on tenor sax, and Bix Beiderbecke on coronet.
Georgia, Georgia, the whole day through, just a little song keeps Georgia on my mind. Georgia on my mind, Georgia, Georgia, just a song of you comes as sweet and clear as moonlight through the pines.
Dave Frischberg.
What if Hoagy tried to write songs that it was easy and comfortable for him to sing in his own character? That might be why Hoagy Carmichael's songs sound the way they do, is because he sings them and we think of that. I really have always been attracted to singers who have that kind of personal sound.
Max Morath.
I've often thought how interesting it is that those of us who play the piano and sing to an audience develop a different set of synapses. And I can't explain what happens, but I know something happens there that started with Hoagy Carmichael when he was a kid in Indiana. He was playing and singing, and the dovetailing took place and continued throughout his life and throughout his career.
There was something else about Hoagy's songs that appealed to listeners. Many of them seemed to be about things people recognized as their own. Small town life, all sunny days and rhubarb pies, parlor pianos, shady verandas, and lazy rivers.
Up the lazy river by the old mill run, that lazy, lazy river in the noonday sun. Linger in the shade of a kind old tree, throw away your troubles, dream a dream with me. Up the lazy river where the robin's song awakes a bright new morning, you can loaf along. Blue skies up above, everyone's in love. Up that lazy river, how happy you can be. Up that lazy river with me.
Barbara Lee. Most of them are about home, and his home could be anywhere. It was this place that he had in his mind, in his heart, in his soul, this place where it was always summer, where the living was slow, where folks were friendly, black or white. They knew each other, they liked each other, or maybe sometimes put up with each other, but it wasn't a world with hatred in it. It wasn't a world with war. It wasn't, for the most part, a world with anxiety. It was a world of peace and ease and sunshine and summer. It was just a beautiful, wonderful world.
Bob Doro.
A shady veranda in Arkansas couldn't be too far from that in Memphis. I think the small town aspect is almost more important than the regional part, you know, getting those views. Hoagy is definitely a country boy, even though Bloomington must be quite a sizable town, and he went to Chicago, he went to New York, he went to Los Angeles. But he kept his country hokum.
Max Morath.
Doesn't make any difference where home is, Indiana, Alabama, New York, Chicago. A home song is for all of us. If it's well written, it transcends place and becomes a home song for me. It's a big, big category in American popular song. Song of everywhere, you know. Folk songs about going home, finding your roots, going back.
I know where the beech trees bear a harvest all the year round. And I know where the old gray mare eats bluegrass from the ground. That's where folks never turn a hand, they just live off the land. My rocking chair is waiting there, that's why I'm homeward bound. I love
Max Morath singing Hoagy Carmichael's Moon Country, with a lyric by Johnny Mercer. It's one of a long list of Carmichael songs about home. Lazy Bones, Georgia on My Mind, New Orleans, and Can't Get Indiana Off My Mind. Even in a world dominated by such giants as Cole Porter, George Gershwin, and Jerome Kern, Hoagy Carmichael was something new, a songwriter who also played and sang his own songs. Before long, that special gift would carry him into a new life, one he could never have imagined, back home in Indiana. I'm Nancy Wilson, and you're listening to Jazz Profiles, a tribute to Hoagy Carmichael on NPR National Public Radio.
Now when my cousin Cindy Lou plays a twilight hymn for you, she makes that old piano sound exactly like brand new. I long for that moon country. That's where I should be, 'cause that old moon country, well, that's home to me. To get your day's work done, you'll never get your day's work done, sleeping in the noonday sun.
By 1933, Hoagy Carmichael was a head above the crowd, not only a gifted songwriter, but also a singer. He both played and sang his tunes with a jazz musician's ease of delivery. Hoagy Carmichael.
I was one of the few songwriters who could also sing the song. And as a result of that, I was invited to perform on radio and do my songs on radio and maybe some other songs that weren't mine. I didn't really need to do it. I might have better spent my time just composing songs. But I finally got a kick out of being that close to the public and doing some things that they appreciated.
Pianist, singer, and songwriter Dave Frischberg.
Hoagy might be regarded as the prototype of the singer-piano players that followed. I mean, even up to Billy Joel, I suppose, and including me, I would say, and Bob Dorrow. I hear echoes of Hoagy and him. But Hoagy was, I think, the original model of that, whatever that is.
Perhaps the most unusual of all of Hoagy's songs is one he first sketched out in 1929, but came back to during the 30s. Its setting isn't Indiana or Georgia or any place between the Appalachians and the Rockies. It's far off, exotic Hong Kong.
It's a story of a very unfortunate color man who got arrested down in old Hong Kong. He got 20-year privilege taken away from him when he kicked old Buddha's gong. And now he's bobbing up Vienna just to raise the price of a ticket to the land of the free. Well, he say his home's in Frisco where they ship the rice, but it's really in Tennessee. That's why he say...
Pianist and singer Bob Dorrow.
I decided it had to be a piano player stuck in this fabulous city. And we know that he had a problem. He could never get out because he had the sweet opium. But I took it and made it a sort of a nightclub piece featuring the piano and definitely trying to provoke the image of a stranded piano player whose only hope to get out of his predicament is to keep playing that piano. Blang, 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 blang. And if he keeps clunking those eighth notes, he might get out. But I doubt it.
By the mid-1930s, a lot had changed. Bix Beiderbecke was gone, dead at age 28. And Hoagy's jazz days suddenly seemed part of his past. But his future looked bright. His songs were being recorded all the time and played on the radio. Singer Mildred Bailey had made Carmichael's Rockin' Chair her theme, even billing herself as the Rockin' Chair Lady.
Old rockin' chair's got me, cane by my side. Fetch me that gin, son, for I tan your hide. Can't get from this cabin. Go nowhere. Just sit me here grabbing at the flies round this rocking chair.
Hoagy wrote Lazy Bones with Johnny Mercer, Old Man Harlem with Rudy Valley, One Morning in May with Mitchell Parrish, and quite a few songs with his own lyrics. He was now a celebrity, and in 1936, he got married and left New York for Hollywood, full of plans to write songs for the movies. Hoagy's son, Hoagy Bix Carmichael.
California meant a lot to my father. We bought Mr. Wrigley's house, and believe me, it was a great house. Dad was not able to do that sort of thing in New York and Indiana. He needed, as he always called it, he needed a poke, which was a few dollars in his pocket, and a nice house in the sunshine. And California and writing for the movies gave him all of that. He brought his mother, he brought his two sisters west, and they all began to feel the warmth of the sunshine. And they all had a little poke. And they all, felt the milk and honey that none of them were able to feel as kids. It was the good life.
Hoagy settled comfortably into the good life. Hollywood seemed a sunshine fairyland. He learned to play tennis and golf, went to parties where he got to know all the famous movie stars of the day, even started appearing in movies himself. His performance as the piano player Cricket was a highlight of the movie To Have and Have Not with Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall. But the path led away from jazz, away from jam sessions and unforgettable nights in Harlem, listening to Armstrong and Duke Ellington and the rest of the jazz royalty. Author and critic John McDonough.
Those may have been his roots, but it didn't become his life. Ellington remained in the jazz life and in the jazz world, but Carmichael, he exercised other options. Maybe it was a function of race. Ellington had fewer options. Fewer options were open to him as a black composer and band leader than to Carmichael. But without bringing race into it, let's just say that Carmichael left the jazz world behind him at a point in his career and chose the route of the popular songwriter.
All the same, it was still the jazz players and singers who snapped up the great Carmichael songs as they came out. Trumpeter and vocalist Hot Lips Page loved Hoagy's Small Fry.
Here comes that good-for-nothing brat of a boy. He's such a devil, I could whip him with joy. He's been carousing at the burlicue. Just watch me teach him with the sole of my shoe. Small fry, strutting by the pool room. Small fry, should be in the schoolroom. My, my, put down that cigarette. You ain't a grown-up high and mighty yet. Oh, small fry.
Billie Holiday worked her special magic with April in My Heart.
No leaves lie on the ground, the world just turned around. It isn't fall at all, you see, it's spring that I have found. There's frost in Central Park, at 5 it's almost dark. What's the difference when you heard love's sweet amen? There's snowflakes in the sky and geese are flying high. But there's April in my heart again.
The great Ethel Waters brought her musical and theatrical gifts to Hoagy's blues-tinged Bread and Gravy.
Bread and gravy, lots of bread and gravy. Good night kisses, and my man never misses. No bad news now, no more blues now. Lots of bread and gravy all the time.
I begin to glow.
Even Bing Crosby went back to his jazz roots in delivering Carmichael's Moonburn with the great Joe Sullivan at the piano.
I'm gonna get a moonburn when I'm with you tonight. So very soon I'll moonburn when you hold me tight. I'll ask the glowing stars up above me what your lips will impart. And when they flash the word that you love me, you know it's gonna warm my heart.
Growing up in Ohio, I fell in love with Hoagie's The Nearness of You. It's still one of my all-time favorite songs. In fact, I don't remember a time when I didn't sing it.
It's just the nearness of you. It isn't your sweet conversation that raises this sensation. It's just the nearness of you.
Singer Barbara Lee.
Alec Wilder spoke about a certain song having an air of permissiveness about it. And a lot of those songs do, Lazy River and Lazy Bones and so on. They're kind of not really blues-based, but they're related to blues and this kind of lazy rhythm kind of thing. They're so easy. They let you in. They let the performer do as he or she will, and then you give it out, and it's still a Carmichael song. If you improvise, for the most part, you haven't destroyed anything.
Dave Frischberg.
He was able to draw melodies out of the air in a very graceful and inspired way, and the melodies didn't even sound like each other. He was able to just grab them. He never sounds like he's searching for a melody when he writes, as some, like for instance Richard Rodgers, I always felt you could kind of hear his brain working when he wrote, but Hoagie's melodies seemed very natural. He just found them in the air and wrote them down.
Dad had jazz licks in his hands, in his head, that he could never and would never, ever be able to divorce himself from. Now, was he a jazz writer in the 40s and 50s? Well, no, but jazz, heavily jazz influenced, no question about that. He had his jazz period in the 20s and early 30s, and, did he divorce himself? Did he throw out jazz with the bathwater? I don't think so. I don't think he could have. And frankly, I don't think he did. Jazz was, in his bones.
Listening to NPR Jazz Profiles, a tribute to Hoagie Carmichael. I'm Nancy Wilson. Though he'd moved far away from the jazz world, one of Hoagie's greatest moments on record was a jazz LP he did in 1956 with an all-star group including Harry Sweets Edison on trumpet and Art Pepper on alto sax with arrangements by Johnny Mandel.
Memphis in June, a shady veranda under a Sunday blue sky. Memphis in June and cussing Amanda's, making a rhubarb pie.
Hoagie Carmichael's melodies still draw jazz performers. As tenor saxophonist Bud Freeman once put it, you don't have to improvise much on them. The jazz is already in them. Here are pianist Jimmy Rolls and tenor sax immortal Stan Getz on one of the great ones by Hoagie and Johnny Mercer, Skylark. Another Carmichael Byrd song is Baltimore Oriole, lyric by Paul Francis Webster, sung here by Bob Doro.
Gonna tell my story one more time. Baltimore Oriole. She took a look at the mercury one day. Well, 'twas 40 below. No time for a lady, so she said, to be dragging her feathers around in the snow. Leaving her nest, she was dressed in her best. She split to the Tangipaho, big river down by New Orleans, where the two-timing Jaybird met my divine Miss O. They played around with the snow on the ground.
Here's Barbara Lee swinging easily through another Carmichael Mercer winner, Ooh, What You Said.
Ooh, what you said got me all flustered, face is red. Ooh, what you said when you said what you said. Ooh, what you did got me all bashful like a kid. Ooh, what you did when you did what you did.
The uniquely lyrical cornet of Bobby Hackett on Hoagie's New Orleans. Another great brass man, Chet Baker, singing one of the most touching of Carmichael ballads, I Get Along Without You Very Well.
I get along without you very well. Of course I do. Except when soft rains fall and drip from leaves, then I recall the thrill of being sheltered in your arms.
A million-selling record by singer-pianist Ray Charles gave Georgia On My Mind new popularity in 1960. But as the decade got underway, it was painfully clear that the great days of American popular song were over. Rock and roll had moved in, shoving aside dozens of performers and songwriters. Some tried to keep up with the trend and crashed. Others hit the resort circuit, playing to enthusiastic but aging audiences.
For that would surely break my heart into.
Hoagie Carmichael kept on composing.
I bet you I have 25 songs lying in my trunk. They're new ones that I've written in the last 5 or 6 years.
But now the publishers and record companies no longer answered his calls. To borrow a line from Stardust, sometimes he wondered. As Hoagie told a Canadian radio interviewer in 1964.
The strange thing is people don't even call me to ask me if I've got a good song to record. The business is so good that they don't really need me, I guess. But I would think that once in a while they would come to me and say, have you got a real good song for such and such an artist? But they don't, just don't need us.
Hoagie Carmichael spent his last years playing golf, doing appearances on radio and TV, paying regular visits to his beloved Indiana University. He died, age 82, on December 27, 1981. But his music didn't die, didn't fade into the past it so often celebrated. It lived and lives on to this day, part of our present and our future. Dave Frischberg.
It would seem to me that his contemporaries, like Cole Porter and Irving Berlin, and George Gershwin were pretty well focused on the present and tried to be hip, up to date, and even cutting edge. Whereas Hoagy, I think, found himself kind of supporting the forces of nostalgia. And there's also a little bit of regret maybe in his music that things turned out the way they finally did. I guess someone has to write that way, though. Someone has to be the curator or the archivist or person who keeps pointing you at yesterday.
Bob Dorough.
He's so American. Hoagy's songs are going to be a wonderful treasure to keep the American people in touch with their past. We need Hoagy, and he'll keep us on track.
The way Barbara Lee sees it, the world portrayed in so many Hoagy Carmichael songs was
just a beautiful, wonderful world, the kind of world that really is vanishing. And maybe he felt it vanishing when he was writing those songs, too. Sometimes I wonder why I spend the lonely night dreaming of a song. It draws you in, and for a period of time, you're lifted out of all of your concerns, all of your troubles, and all of the troubles of the world. That's what music is for, in my mind. Our tribute to Hoagy Carmichael was written by Richard M. Sudhalter. Our editor and studio producer was Molly Murphy, with technical assistance by Andy Rosenberg. Jazz Profiles is produced by Tim Owens, assistant producer Madeline Smith. Our website coordinator is Patrick Breslin. The 1964 Canadian Broadcasting Corporation interview with Hoagy Carmichael, courtesy of the Archives of Traditional Music, Indiana University. Special thanks to Suzanne Mudge. Thanks also to Vincent Pelote of the Institute of Jazz Studies at Rutgers University, to Bill Kirshner and Michael Brooks. To email us, or for more information about this and other programs in our series, contact us through NPR's homepage on the World Wide Web at npr.org. That's npr.org. Major support for Jazz Profiles comes from the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund, helping people to make the arts and culture part of their everyday lives. Additional support has been provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the National Endowment for the Arts. I'm Nancy Wilson. This is NPR, National Public Radio.